What happens when two people understand each other perfectly but can't seem to stay together? In a small Irish town, a wealthy but lonely girl and a popular but insecure boy begin a secret relationship that will shape the rest of their lives. Their story isn't about grand gestures or dramatic decorations. It's about the quiet devastation of miscommunication, the invisible walls that class builds between people, and the transformative power of being truly seen by another person. Why do we keep returning to those who hurt us? Why does love sometimes feel like both salvation and destruction? This is a story about two people trying to figure out how to be normal in a world that seems determined to keep them apart. In Caraclea, Marianne and Connell inhabit different worlds. She's wealthy but socially ostracized, examining herself like a piece of technology, with eyes like cursors blinking. He's popular but poor, his mother cleaning Marianne's house while he waits in the kitchen. Their unlikely bond begins with conversations about books that evolve into something unexpected. After their first kiss, Connell makes a devastating request: don't tell anyone at school. Their relationship unfolds in shadows, intense within her bedroom, non-existent in hallways. For Marianne, this secrecy confirms she's fundamentally unlovable. For Connell, it's protection from judgment. The breaking point arrives when Connell asks Rachel to prom instead. His weak justification, "I do already have you," shows how little he grasps the damage. Marianne quits school entirely. When Connell's mother discovers the truth, she makes him pull over. "I'm ashamed of you." This pattern of connection and betrayal will define them for years. Trinity College flips their world upside down. Marianne, with her wealth and sophistication, effortlessly integrates into Dublin's elite circles, while Connell feels invisible. At Trinity, "No one knows who I am," he reflects, self-conscious about his cheap clothes among classmates in hunting jackets. Their reunion at a party feels surreal. Marianne greets him with a gigantic smile and confesses, "I've missed you." Despite everything in Caraclea, their connection rekindles almost instantly. The power dynamic has shifted. Marianne holds the social capital, yet rather than wielding it cruelly as Connell once did, she proves remarkably generous, introducing him to her world without shame. This reversal forces uncomfortable truths. Connell must experience the isolation he once inflicted on Marianne. She must decide whether to replicate his cruelty or demonstrate a better way. After a drunken night together, Connell makes her breakfast and they sleep together for the first time in nearly a year. Afterward, he whispers, "I think we'll be fine," a moment of tenderness suggesting they might finally heal. Marianne's relationships reveal disturbing patterns. With Jamie, she enters submissive arrangements involving bondage and beatings. She experiences orgasm without any perceptible joy, while her brain goes empty. In Sweden, photographer Lucas establishes the game with strict rules: no speaking or eye contact during sex. Afterward, he tells her she's worthless and nothing, words she finds tranquilizing. The source emerges. Her brother, Alan, physically abuses her, once spitting on her after an argument. Her mother enables this violence, striking the table when Marianne mentions it and accusing her of thinking she's special. This family dynamic has taught Marianne that abuse equals love. With Connell, something shifts. When she asks him to hit her during sex, he refuses. "I don't want to hit you. I love you." She feels rejected, believing she's become, even Connell finds disgusting. But his boundary setting becomes an act of love that forces her to confront toxic patterns, illuminating the difference between love and abuse, a distinction Marianne has struggled to recognize. Class differences form a constant undercurrent, shaping how Connell and Marianne see themselves and each other. Despite their intellectual compatibility, they remain acutely aware of the social gulf between them. Marianne's family is good, while Connell's is bad in Caraclea's hierarchy. At Trinity, these differences sharpen. Connell feels like an imposter among wealthy students who seem like machines, working and grinding forward. His scholarship covers rent, tuition, and meals, profound material change that opens previously unimaginable possibilities. Foreign cities, famous artworks, financial freedom. That's money, he reflects, the substance that makes the world real. For Marianne, it merely confirms what she already believed, that she's special. The novel explores how class shapes identity without offering simple solutions. Connell fears losing his roots while feeling alienated from Trinity's elite culture. Marianne, despite her wealth, feels fundamentally unworthy due to her family's emotional poverty. Their relationship becomes a space where these tensions exist without resolution, a rare connection that transcends but never fully escapes the class divisions structuring their world. As their relationship deepens, both reveal formative traumas. In Italy, Marianne discloses that her brother hits her and has told her to kill herself while their mother does nothing. She'd hidden this, fearing Connell would see her as damaged and leave. Connell weeps, ashamed for not knowing. His compassion, rather than rejection, begins healing her belief that she's unlovable. Vulnerability won't destroy their bond. Connell confronts his own trauma when his friend Rob commits suicide. The loss triggers severe depression and panic attacks. At counseling, his Beck depression inventory score of 43 indicates severe depression. Rob's funeral reconnects them profoundly. Their intense embrace at the church, witnessed by Connell's girlfriend Helen, ends that relationship. They begin talking nightly on Skype, providing mutual support. Only by revealing their wounds can they build understanding rather than idealization. This emotional honesty culminates when Alan breaks Marianne's nose. Connell confronts him. "If you ever touch Marianne again, I'll kill you." Afterward, he promises, "I love you. I'm not going to let anything like that happen to you again." By the novel's end, both have found normality that has nothing to do with conforming. Marianne settles into Dublin life, where she is neither admired nor reviled anymore, finding beauty in ordinary moments, the way gray stone darkens to black and rain moves over the grass. This ordinariness represents not compromise, but achievement, freedom from the extremes that defined her life. Connell discovers purpose through writing. Publishing in the college journal gives him belonging beyond social anxiety, while his MFA acceptance to New York offers identity based on talent rather than performance. After Christmas with Connell's family, Marianne experiences the ordinary family life she never had. On New Year's Eve, Connell kisses her publicly and declares his love, no longer hiding their relationship. When Marianne learns of his acceptance, she encourages him to go, despite knowing it might change everything. She reflects on how they've grown around each other like plants sharing soil. Her final words, "You should go. I'll always be here," show how far she's come from accepting secrecy and emotional scraps. The closing line, "You know I love you, and I'm never going to feel the same way about anyone else," captures their essence. They've transformed one another in ways that endure beyond proximity. Their love has become liberating rather than possessive, allowing each to become fully themselves while maintaining their profound connection.